question of whether or not the record was the right fit for the big media machine, rather than whether the record was successful in and of itself in any kind of artistic way. I mean, a record, you start getting into the definition of success. You know, if a big media machine's record definition of success is it has to sell a million copies, maybe a record could sell a million copies on its own, maybe it can't. But either way, it's got to go through that machine. So, you know, everybody started focusing, I think, on, well, this record didn't work, or this is why it didn't work, as opposed to, well, it didn't work in this process, or maybe this process doesn't work at all, or maybe this process only works for a certain kind of thing. And that's not leveling a good or bad value judgment on the art that works in the big media process, because there's some good stuff that comes out of there. And most of my favorite records came from there when I was growing up, so that's all good too. Sure. But it's just a reflection of that, rather than a complete focus on the music itself. And somewhere I think that got lost, and that's being revolutionized now with new media, is that the records out there that are big successes that sell 4,000 copies.
Yeah, and I think that kind of ties in with Toby's point about his struggles with the perceived kind of technological environment of social media as a way of talking about our music and connecting with audiences, which is that to mismatch a person's kind of desires and expectations with an environment means that it just doesn't work for them. And I think that the old record industry, that it was as an industrial process, it worked for the labels, it didn't work for artists, but it certainly produced an enormous amount of really great music. The big question is whether or not that music would have existed anyway. And, you know, I think if James Taylor was sat in his bedroom, he'd be playing and writing incredible songs. And the fact that, we got to hear them in the way that we did, because the mediation machine, radio, TV and press, I think was there because it was necessary, because there wasn't an alternative. It wasn't there because it was the best possible way of discovering anything. I don't know anyone who uses mainstream radio as a way of discovering music these days. Most of the people I know who listen to mainstream radio do so because they can't be bothered to go and look for it elsewhere. And I think that's a bad thing. I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. I think that it's okay for music to just be, you know, kind of the noise that goes on and reminds you of your youth, or you know, makes you feel like you're connected to what's going on around you. I think that the kind of the socio-cultural implications of what we listen to can get incredibly snobbish when we start saying, well, people who listen to Top 40 radio are idiots. Well, no, they're not. Mm-hmm. They just listen to it for a different reason. But I think that it would be insane to suggest that Top 40 radio was a filter of quality in any, you know, in any measure at all. I think that if you were to try and apply any objective kind of measure, because I guess the only way that a piece of music can be successful or not is whether or not it meets the objectives of the person creating it. Ultimately, you know, is this a success in the terms that were set out for its creation? So I have bits of music of mine that are objectively more successful than others based on, you know, my process and what I'm doing and why, and they don't necessarily match up to whether the ones that are most popular. So I don't know where we're going with that. Yes, the old industry kind of producing a lot of good music. But I think that what's interesting for me in relation to your question, Andrew, is that there are a whole load of things now that are possible that weren't before, that there wasn't an equivalent of. There wasn't an equivalent of Twitter. The nearest to it would have been the press release. But the problem with the press release was that you wrote one press release and sent it to a load of faceless people who then rewrote it for millions of other faceless people, most of whom didn't give a shit, that you would either write ad copy and pay for it to go into a magazine, or you would send out a press release and hope that they would write an article about you. But it certainly wasn't in any way targeted to even it's kind of demographic groups, let alone to individuals. And with Twitter and Facebook and things, I can have these multiple public conversations for which there is no old media synonym. There's no, there's nothing that matches to that. And what's great about that is that with in any broadcast environment, I receive nothing back at all. I'm putting out, and the only measure of it is whether the product itself sells. And that's not something that I as a human being benefit from. You know, that more money there's no proof or suggestion that beyond, you know, enough to live on, money makes us happier. There's a lot of evidence to the contrary. Whereas actually the things that happen to me because of the internet are things that are demonstrably beneficial to me as a person. They make me a nicer, more aware, more caring, more involved person with the people around me. And none of that was possible in the same way before, that I was limited to the geographical location of being in the same place as the people who needed help, the people who were able to tell me good things about music, the people who were able to point me to things. I needed to be where they were. Or I was in a one-to-one phone conversation. So that possibility to disseminate information in that personal way, but with it being publicly searchable and publicly findable, there's been nothing like it ever before. And I was talking to Kira about this last night, that I never hear bad music. Mm-hmm. Apart from in supermarkets where my brain shuts it out and occasionally something comes on, I've never listened to a whole Lady Gaga song. I'm not interested enough in her to bother looking it out. And that's more about uninteresting music, because whether or not it's good or bad, I don't know. I haven't listened to it. But I spend my entire life listening to awesome music, whether it's music I've found or music that comes through trusted kind of filters. That I've managed to find those. And I think that part of the problem with most people's perception of the internet is that we don't have an established process for finding those filters. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people look at the web and go, it's flooded. And right. You go, well, yeah, there's tens of millions of bands on the web. I don't come into contact with them. I'm never hijacked by any of them. Because whenever someone tries to spam me, I ignore it. So the worst thing is that there is no kind of... That most people don't understand how those filters work. They haven't actually been able to establish them. And the ones that work for me won't necessarily work for everyone else. That's the single hardest thing. And of the processes that I'm doing now, that were what I was doing before, that the ability to release music online at zero cost to me, again, is something that didn't exist before. So it's replacing the money critical process of putting a CD out was not something you could experiment with. You had to be pretty sure you were going to make your money back. Or have spare cash to do it, or someone else had to. And now I can put music out speculatively and let people enjoy it without needing to, without worrying that I've remortgaged my house to do it. Kira.
Well, I think part of what you were talking about points to what Saskia was talking about. You have to, being able to use this stuff effectively, you have to kind of have a knack for knowing how to use it. You have to be good at, you got to be good at Twitter, and you got to be good at Facebook, and not everyone is hardwired to do that. And then Toby was talking about not wanting to be at home by yourself trying to connect to people online. I can relate to that in that Twitter and Facebook and all these things have sort of helped me. They've kept me at home trying to communicate with people, but they've also, at least if I'm going to be home by myself, at least I can communicate with people. So yeah. It's sort of a double-edged sword. And when you work from home for yourself, that's better than talking to the cat. I do that plenty. Talks back a lot. and I appreciate it for that. And Andrew was talking about how most of the music that he listens to is from friends and people he knows. And if he doesn't know them, he gets to know them. And that I really, really treasure. I didn't used to have that, aside from, hoping that whoever came to the bar and, nodded at me or smiled wasn't going, when's she going to shut up? They actually enjoyed it. As far as, I guess that would be your question about what's different, or Andrew's question about what's different now than what it was before. In terms of promoting stuff, it was just me yakking at, I remember mailing out postcards when I had gigs.
Yeah.
Wow, that seems like a long time ago.
And it meant that you needed to make another $150 on a gig because you needed to cover those postcards.
The postcards, yeah, exactly. And I never knew if they were even arriving at the right addresses. But now these immediate, people are chatting with us on these little streams and these little dudes over here, and it's great. It's loads of fun. And it's, I'm having random folks... random sales, over in Holland or something like that. Now I know who that is because I saw them chatting with you or with you, and I'm there's much more of a sense of community now than even with my limited grasp of it all.
Yeah, that's great. Brian?
Well, just quickly, two things. One, to speak to something that Kira was just saying in terms of immediacy of connection and communities. Kira's community background in her musician community before we got together was mainly in Austin with a bunch of people who like country music and honky tonk. And my musical background was from people who like progressive rock and Zappa music.
You could evidenced not, by our t-shirts.
You could not get two communities who would be further apart and perhaps never co-mingle in real life. Mm-hmm. And yet, as we start doing more work together, you see people from Holland who are Zappa fans buying her CD.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, you'll see somebody in Texas with a cowboy hat on buying my instrumental music. Which is, that to me is pretty revolutionary.
Yeah, yeah.
You would have a hard time doing that without this stuff in place. And the other thing I wanted to address is this is going back a little bit, but something that Toby was saying really, really landed for me. When I do more live work than I do studio, but I'm doing more studio work now lately. And I find that when I spend too much time in the studio in front of the screen, I start to get a little nuts. And I never really thought about it that way because I have been primarily a live performer. So I'm constantly in this mindset of like, well, I got to go home and I'm going to go home and, you know, communicate with all my people, keep my marketing presence online and say hi to everybody and then send stuff out and then go out and say hi to everyone. And then I go out and I get my total fill of being in public and like, I get all this interaction and I get overloaded and I go, oh, it'll be so great to go back and just get in front of my screen a little bit and be comfortable by myself. Well, for the people who aren't actually performing, I could see how you could get really, really trapped in front of the box all day long, whether you're staring at a Pro Tools screen or you're staring at a Twitter screen. Mm-hmm. So I very, very much empathize with people who feel like the box can draw you in and just sit there. And you got to find ways to get out in real life. And this is coming from someone who likes to hide out. For people who don't like to hide out and really like to be public to be in this world suddenly where a lot of it is right here, I empathize. And I think that people really, you know, you got to find a way to kind of get out there and break the box. I don't want to take any more time.
And oddly enough, I'm going to kind of echo what Brian said and what Toby was saying earlier. It's really easy to kind of park it in front of the computer and work, and you're working at developing these relationships, but you have to strike a balance. It's really easy for me because, like most of everybody else, I'm self-employed. But what's nice is, you know, you look forward to meeting these people you develop these relationships with, and when you do get to meet them for the first time, you've kind of already had this relationship. You're walking into a community. It's not entirely unfamiliar. There's already a rapport established, which is really nice. It takes the edge off of things.
And was there an equivalent to that before? Was there a way of you kind of remotely connecting with people and then meeting them?
Well, I mean, yeah, I suppose, but
telephone.
Yeah, you could call them up if you had their number.
Yeah.
But unless you had a union directory or whatever, there was just no way of, you know, you look at the back of a record and there was no way of getting in touch with that person because you'd go, well, that. You know, you'd either have to go through the studio and then you'd have to pretend that you was, you know, making a record and wanted to hire them in order to have a conversation. Right. There was no casual way of going to someone and saying, hey, I just like what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember, as we're talking about this, the first time, technically, I suppose, I met you, was I had just gotten on MySpace, way, way back. I mean, remember now, probably 4 years ago. And you came in, I had no idea who you were, and you just left a comment about my upright bass, my electric upright, and that's actually how I met Steve Lawson and found out about a lot of these great things. You know, I think we met in person the first time yesterday, but there was already a rapport there, so it was really great to have that. It felt very familiar. I think the benefits definitely outweigh. You know, sometimes I'm there at 2 a.m. trying to get it all done and get all these relationships established, but I really think the benefits outweigh it. I'm going to be there anyway. I'd probably just be doing my accounting alone.
I certainly find that community aspect of that, going back to what Toby was saying. Where am I? I'm off screen. Hello, I'm here. Hello. Going back to to Toby's point about the isolation, that I find that if you're we'll get to you, you loser. Shut up. Just one last thing from me. The Toby's point about isolation, I find that what it does is it actually softens the isolation. That when I am sat at home, I've got people I can talk to, and I can throw, I throw random questions out. You know, I'll be heading into town in London, and London is obviously a fairly unique environment for this because it's so huge and so full of nerds. But I can throw a thing out on Twitter and say, I'm going into town, who wants to meet for coffee? And it's back to Steph and his serendipity engine. But over to Mr. Dubber, because he has a question.
I'm